This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job. Hey, Patrick, are you obsessed with cars?
Yes, I am, Dan.
And did you write one of the most famous episodes of one of the greatest comedies in TV history?
No, I did not.
Did you host a late night TV show?
No, not that I recall.
Has your love of cars turned into a wildly entertaining coloring book?
Definitely not.
All right, well then you have some things in common, but not a lot in common with today's guest. Spike Ferriston is a legendary comedy writer, performer, and collector of all things that vroom. Please welcome Spike.
Hello, guys. That was a nice introduction.
Thank you. We worked on that for hours.
Yeah.
Who is this?
It was
fella?
Grueling. We're up all night.
Don't do that again.
Well, very, very cool to talk to you. We're both a bit. We'd call ourselves comedy nerds and car nerds. So this is a lot coming together here.
Well, fabulous!
The perfect union.
This will be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it then.
Or it might be terrible because we're terrible at this. So you be the judge. let's just get this out of the way. You wrote the Soup Nazi episode of Seinfeld, which is probably one of the most quoted episodes in that show's incredible history. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yes. It took 20 years to get that. Congratulations from you, Dan. But I finally have it.
Well, yeah.
Right.
So
here
now. You're also really into cars. And one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about is this. Not only are you into cars, but you actually have developed a coloring book that's devoted to your love of cars. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, that's a long and twisty road. I mean, I'm guessing one or both of you are friends of Fireball, Tim Lawrence.
Yes. Who isn't friends of Fireball?
I wasn't up until a few months ago. We only knew him as the guy we thought that was trying to shut down our cars and coffee during the pandemic. And it turns out he was not.
Okay.
But he was maligned on my show and on Matt Ferris, The Smoking Tire. And shortly after came up and he said, hey, I think you guys are wrong. You know, your fans, by the way, are trying to kill me. I was just out at the gate trying to help people with the security guard or something. And we had a nice conversation and he told me about what he did for a living, designing cars and films. And I love that stuff. And is it, you know, being involved in Batmobiles and you know, we became quick kind of Malibu friends, and I invited him on my podcast, and we had a great time, and the fans loved him and hated me and my co-host for demonizing him. It was great. It was really a fun character development for our show. And then not long after, he said, you know, I do this thing on the side where I make coloring books for people. I believe he had just done the Tony Dow, which is Wally from Leave It to Beaver coloring book, which weirdly I had seen promotion for it somewhere in my travels on the internet. And I was like, wow, I should go to that. That's pretty cool. He's signing.
You were probably on the Hugh Beaumont fan site.
Right. Yes, exactly. I spend most of my time trading collectibles. But I said, yeah, you know, I don't know if a coloring book is anything I've ever thought of doing in my life, but I do feel like I owe you one, Fireball. And, you know, what are we saying here? And he said, look, you pick your 20 favorite cars. We'll do a crossword and a secret find. I'm like, that's cool. You know, I remember coloring as a kid, and I know a lot of adults do it, and we're all jammed up in this pandemic, and some people find it relaxed. And I go, if I picked really cool cars that were meaningful to me and told a little blurb or two about how I felt about them. I get that. That would be fun. I would do that. And lo and behold, and that's what we have here. And here it is right there.
So for those who can't see, because you're listening to this, he's holding up a coloring book that has a remarkable facsimile of
it. Is it? Close enough. But it does have my Volkswagen police Beetle on there, which is a real police car from Würzburg, Germany in 1979.
Wow.
I guarantee you, that's not... Yeah, I own this car. That's not in any coloring book in the world.
No.
So... You know, and they're only like $10 on Amazon. They're easy to get. And, you know, I looked through and it was funny. There was a mistake. The first week, I guess, volumes, whatever you call them, are going to be rare because they're the ones that have the mistaken years. They have a lot of typos in them. They're missing the words. Like you can see here. Look right here. There was no 2015 Porsche Carrera GT. It was a 2004, 2005 6. And there's nothing, there are no blurbs yet. Fireball was just firing them out there without the description.
They're fireballing.
But, you know, as I go through it, now fans are kind of sending their versions of the coloring. Look at this. Here's a good example of a coloring book. The Schwinn Orange Crate. From the 1960s.
That's amazing.
That was my first bicycle that my, coincidentally, Uncle Timmy gave to me. And I rode that thing like a BMX bike. I took it over jumps. It's got the tiny front wheel and the long forks.
Yeah.
And it's still a very meaningful thing to me. There's one other thing in here that, while we're on the subject, that I can only tell on your podcast. But here is the 78 Honda Accord. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
there you go. That was my mom's car. It had a 5-speed in it. It was an import, which was big news in my small town. But I lost my virginity in that car.
Wow.
Tim said, please don't put that in the blurb for the book because kids are doing it. I go, but it's important.
In your mom's car?
In my mom's car, yeah.
Wow.
But to me, that was a performance car. I grew up in a small town in Massachusetts, right? So it was Grand Torinos and Torino 500s if you were lucky. Then this Honda Accord thing comes in with a clutch and a 5-speed, and you're like, God, what is this, a Ferrari?
Yeah.
We love that.
That's incredible.
Spike, one thing I wanted to mention, just because I think some of our listeners might not be as like diehard car people as us, can you kind of explain the concept of a Cars and Coffee? Because I think it's an awesome thing that a lot of people might not know about.
Yeah, I mean... It's the simplest idea is you're just going to get coffee with your friends around the same time. And whoever shows up and everybody drives a cool car and you hang out. That's really what it's turned into. And I think it's where it came from, like, is the, I don't know. Personally, I don't like car shows. I think they're boring. It seems to be the same bunch of guys in tan cargo shorts standing there with their arms crossed going, yeah, well, the mirror on that thing is, you know, and I can't stand them, really. So Cars and Coffee is more of a social thing, right?
Mm.
So you'll drive to hang out with your friends who are kind of like-minded and talk to them. You might look at cars, but it's kind of about the drive and your personal experience on that drive and then hanging out with friends and kind of meeting new people. And, you know, it's got a little more of a social aspect to it. And it's there's no set time. You can come and go as you please. It really is an improvement on what a car show is.
And I feel like
what does your car collection look like these days?
You know, I'm a Porsche collector. I like Porsches. And I'm driving a lot of press cars at the same time. So, you know, it's good. Life is good for a person like me. Like today I've got the Ducati Multistrada V4S motorcycle and an M8 competition M8 BMW four-door Grand Coupe in the driveway. I think the new GT3 is coming along. I have a new Defender that I'm driving that's mine. It's fun. It's good. I have old motorcycles, I'm not like Leno or Seinfeld where I have a ton of stuff laying around, but I have a nice little curated collection out at Santa Monica Airport that I've had for about 20 years.
I'm curious, what strikes you the most when you go between these like press cars, which are obviously the latest and greatest, and then like, you go from that into one of your older cars?
Well, we have a thing when we're driving our old classic cars that a lot of time will drive forward. Right. So you might start in 58 and then you move forward, and that gives you a nice experience. If it's too jolty, if you go from something brand new down, all the way to the back again, that can be fun, too. But if you do something that's too close to the other car, it's generally not. Like lately, I've changed changed my point of view on all of that. I like to drive very different things the next time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The press cars, I generally only ask for things that I like, because when I review them on the show, I don't really want to be negative and tear stuff apart. So I'm usually talking about lifestyle. In other words, hey, I drove this brand new Ferrari 488 for a week. I dailied it around the west side of LA, and here's what happened, right? Which I think is my little pocket of useful information. You know, the lady scowling at you at the supermarket, or the lack of storage space at the supermarket, or the wife won't get in it on date night, or the kids, the middle schooler won't let me drive him to school in it, but the grade schooler says you have to drive me. I find the fans that are listening to the podcast really like to know those little things. And then I try to point out the basic kind of goofball stuff that I notice about the car that's not working or is working. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so my car collection is a leased Acura and a 2008 Saab. So
there you go.
What happens with me is that the Acura has a backup camera and all those safety features, and the Saab does not. So getting to your point about driving, when I get in the Saab, I start backing up and I forget, like, oh, yeah, I have to turn around and look.
You know, I like that.
It's very dangerous.
You're talking about, I mean, we love that. Analog mechanical experiences. I love a car that has nothing on it. No power steering, no power brakes, just old school, just car.
Right.
But you just don't want to be in that car a lot. You know, yesterday I had, or 2 days ago, I had to go up and get vaccinated about an hour away from my house. So I took this M8 up and I threw on what they call BMW assisted driving. And it was all highway, straight shot, set the cruise control to 85, and it's adaptive. So you're behind whatever car you're behind, it's keeping you one or two car lengths behind it, and it's also keeping you in the lanes. And as long as you give it a little bit of an input, I mean, put your hand on the steering wheel every 10 seconds or so, the car drives itself.
Wow.
And it was great. And not all of these assisted driver's aids work like that, but the BMW, instead of going like a pong between the lanes, pinging from left to right line, stayed right in the middle. You know, I was able to kind of look down and read a couple of emails and read a couple texts and keep my hand. It was, and then maybe about 20 minutes in, re-engage with the car and drive it and enjoy myself. But it was, it was good. And it, you know, I found myself going, we're going to be needing a new skill set soon, which is how not to tune out in that situation.
Yeah. Right.
Like there was a moment where I was like, oh shit, I haven't looked at the road for 5 straight minutes. And I didn't know that I did that, but the car was fine and it did its job, but that's not how we're supposed to use these driver's aids. Yet it lulls you into this kind of dream world, and you know, your feet are off the pedals, they're forward, you're comfortable,
right?
You're doing a couple of things, you know, it's a tricky new little spot.
You you mentioned you have a younger child son, did you say?
I have two boys, yeah.
Two boys, yeah. So do you think your youngest is going to have to learn how to drive? I always think about this. I have a younger son too. Like, is it just a robot going to drive him when he turns 17 or 16?
I hope this is not irresponsible of me, but they both already know how to drive manuals.
Well done.
My 13-year-old learned right when he was around 10 years old driving that Volkswagen. He learned how to drive that. And then I hadn't realized it, but he had not driven any modern cars. And I let him drive the new Land Rover Defender the other day. Or we were up in Lake Tahoe and I was like, well, you can go ahead and drive us home. It's like a long, empty road. And he was like, what is this? This is so great, the steering. And I go, oh, shit, you've never driven anything modern. He goes, no, I just drove the Speedster, the Zagato. I drove, he was driving all stuff that was pre-1960.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, I don't know. It's hard to say, but, you know, when you're in that mode, when someone figures it out and they get it to work where they're not killing someone, here's what I noticed. It's like, I will admit to you, I'm an aggressive driver. And when I was in this fully automated, not fully automated mode, but assisted driving mode, I looked at the Waze and it said, I'm going to get here at this time. And I thought, all right, well, there you go. And I chilled out, right? I wasn't driving aggressively. I wasn't playing Frogger in lanes. I was just, you know, going for the ride. And I thought about that. If there are a lot of people on the road doing that, that's pretty nice. That's going to cut down on some accidents and some road rage and drunk driving, et cetera.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But you said you set the speed at 85, right?
Yeah.
So you went with a little bit.
But the traffic wasn't moving 85. The traffic was moving high 60s. Does that make sense? So it was staying right about, I think speed limit was 65. It was staying like high 60s. Okay. But if someone pulled off to the right, it would then pull up to the next car and slow down again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, but absolutely. I was not flying at 85. No,
right.
I got pulled over the last time I was on that high ride doing that.
More coming up from our guests, but first, a word from our sponsor. Hey, everybody. So hoping these conversations are getting you all fired up to finally start that business you always wanted to launch, or maybe take that side hustle to the next level, but maybe you need just a little more inspiration and information to kind of push you over the edge. Well, that's why I want to talk to you about Entrepreneur Insider. Entrepreneur Insider is a program that we have at entrepreneur.com that is geared to do all of that and more. It's a membership-based program that provides insights and advice from industry experts with exclusive benefits. Let me tell you about those benefits. When you join, you get access to premium articles, videos, webinars, really good webinars, I should add. These are not boring, put you to sleep slideshows. These are great experts that have really, really sharp advice that you can listen to and use them like 10 minutes later. It's really good stuff. You also get a weekly newsletter and you get an ad-free experience when you go to entrepreneur.com. Plus, you get a free one-year subscription to Entrepreneur Magazine, that paper thing that you could carry around and you never have to plug in to recharge. Really great articles every month, really awesome pictures. And sometimes it's nice to just read something on paper, I have to say, from my personal opinion. So, how much does it cost to join Entrepreneur Insider? It's only $5 a month. If you join today, you start boosting your business knowledge, growing your brand, you get access to all these great things. And seriously, those webinars, they're really, really good. I heartily recommend you doing it just for that. And also the magazine, really cool stuff. So if you are interested, and I know you are because you could hear the pleading in my voice that this is actually a really cool deal, visit entrepreneur.com/insider to unlock your access today. That's entrepreneur.com/insider. Unlock your access. Get going. Get fired up. Do it today. And we're back. So
that's
where
exactly the number he said too.
Book on your shelf of awards. Where will the coloring book sit?
I have a mixed feelings about awards. I don't have a shelf of awards. I don't know what to do with them. I feel it's kind of pompous and arrogant to take those things and hang them up, and they're all in storage, things like that.
But
the coloring book will stay here.
Yeah, okay.
This is goofy enough to stay in my office. But yeah, awards, nah. That stuff all got sent away. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this thing. It's already been a ton of fun to make fun of my face on the cover.
Yeah.
That has been.
It's an amazing likeness. It really is.
Well, I've got black weasel eyes, too. Just like those are the eyes of a ferret of some kind. The nose looks like a potato. Nothing against Fireball, but he should stick with cars.
You have to see what Tony Dow thinks about his pick.
Yeah,
Now I'm having Tony Dow on Spike's Car Radio.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, of course. The second I said that, I go, now you owe me a favor. Get me Tony Dow. So he's coming on. Apparently, he likes Porsches and cars. And
wait, you landed Tony Dow?
I have landed Wally, yes. Fireball said, now look, he's answered a lot of questions about Leave It to Beaver. And I go, yeah, well, he's going to answer some more, all right? I'm not going to avoid that. No one is waiting for the Tony Dow car interview. I've got some questions about the show that raised me, and I'm going to ask them.
Spike, I'm curious. You mentioned before Leno and Seinfeld. Like, what do you think is this, like, thing that comedians and cars have? Like, there's some synergy there. Like, what do you attribute that to?
I've asked Jerry that, and he told me that comedians like fun, and cars are fun. Like, that was his simplest kind of explanation. But I think, I don't think it has to do with comedians. I think it just has to do with people. Like, they were raised by parents that either liked them and or, like me, my parents didn't care about cars, but they were on my radar from when I was 2 years old. It's kind of an inexplicable thing. And there's a lot of depth to the whys. I mean, for me, it was, I always like to say, you know, there's nothing better than when I was a teenager, it was all about just getting my friends in a car and getting away from my parents. I didn't care what the car looked like until later on when I saw a cool car and I went, oh, I want something like that, right?
Yeah.
And then it starts you down the road. And then, you know, then I was on motorcycles. And then I went to New York and David Letterman's there. And he's got a collection. And he goes, you're a Porsche guy. And I go, fuck you. No, I'm not. They're fucking assholes and country club losers. And he goes, no, they're like go-karts. And, you know, you're on this kind of road, this long road of learning about things, desiring things, experiencing things. And, you know, before you know it, you've gone down the wormhole.
And you're a bit of a collector, and you collect watches too. Is that right?
I have a small collection. Yeah.
So is it like a mechanical thing? Like, are you just into how things work, or what? How do those two things align in any way?
I think they do. For me, it's like the 70s, right? 70s design. I got really into at one point. So early 70s watches, early 70s 911, early 70s like poster art. You know,
movies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I it's generational, I think. I mean, it's why 80s and 90s cars are moving now. It's everybody kind of looks back to that. I don't know. I think it's from when they were 10 to 18.
Totally.
What was cool there, and whether they're consciously doing it or subconsciously doing it, that's the stuff they really love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Patrick, you were telling me about that, how in the car world, like, cars from the 90s are like a big thing now.
Oh yeah, over at like Bring a Trailer, like, you know, those are like some of the things that are getting like the most attention. People are sharing the most, even like, you know, the younger kids that work in this business, they're all like, oh my God, like, you know, just looking at these things from the 90s now, which is funny to, like, you know, guys like us getting up in years saying like, oh my God, like that's now like a car that people are like salivating over.
Absolutely.
Right? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Spike, I wanted to also ask you about, you know, obviously you're a host of your podcast. Can you tell people the name of it?
Spike's Car Radio.
Spike's Car Radio.
Yes.
And you've written on, you know, legendary TV shows. What are some of the things that you've learned from the likes of David Letterman or Jerry Seinfeld, just about, you know, creativity, and also just, you know, they're at the, you know, David Letterman at the end is the guy standing in front of the camera, but there's this whole team of people helping him get to that spot.
What did I learn?
Yes.
God, that's hard. I learned a lot about what cars to buy from Jerry.
Okay.
I learned about the best apples and chocolate bars from Dave. Okay. I don't know. It's, you know, I went to work for both those guys because they made me laugh. That was the simplest way to explain that. And once I was there, what I really learned in depth was their comedic point of view. Because every day you're writing, especially on Letterman, you're grinding on lines for Dave. So in your head, you're like, what kind of butterfly is that, Sally? You're trying out all these strange phrases and you're saying jokes and you go out with your friends at night and they're like, why are you talking like Dave? You're like, I don't know. Or, you know how it is. And then you do, the same on Seinfeld, you start talking like him. Because you're doing his rhythms all day. It's a weird experience. But that's what you pick up on most, or at least what I did, is how they present comedy. You really get an intimate knowledge on how they do and say things and what's funny to them. Because in the end, that's your job, right? You're just hooking up to that comedic part of their brain as an extra brain to kind of feed it more stuff.
And then how does that inform the way you've had writers working with you on your material?
It's the greatest thing in the world to have a room of writers. I'm working with a group of guys right now that I've been working with on Zoom during the pandemic. All I can tell you is it's when you get it right and you get the right chemistry in a writer's room, it is the best. You will laugh harder than you've ever laughed. You know, you'll have great times together. You'll have some difficult times, but you feel powerful in a way, like a comedy superhero, because you have these great minds behind you that can fix problems and generate things and create something out of nothing.
Right.
And if you know what you're doing, and when I was doing my late night show at that point, I had done those jobs. You can take it to these really amazing places and write things the next day that's everywhere in the public consciousness.
Yeah.
You know? And it's fun. It's really fun. It's always got me off, lack of a better phrase. But, I remember writing my first joke for Weekend Update and then seeing it on the television. I went, wow, that must be like what crack is like. And it's still the same for me. You know,
that's I love amazing. Being well, part your writers of that did an amazing job with the intro to this show. So they faxed
they
that.
Did good. Yes.
So you've got this podcast, you're doing a lot of things. What are some other ways that people can get on board with the Spike experience?
The Spike experience is I have a production company. So I work in entertainment. That's like my day job. It is my least promoted job right now. So everybody thinks the car thing is my hobby. So once a week I get together with Motor Trend's Johnny Lieberman, Smoking Tire's Matt Farah, Jerry Seinfeld, and my co-host Zuckerman. All of the car stuff, you should just know, is just my part-time hobby.
right. Okay.
And then the real stuff, you'll see it. It'll be out soon enough. And, I can't talk about it now, but there's some good stuff coming.
What if we promise to not use this part?
Yeah.
Patrick, stop the tape for a second.
I think you guys will be really excited about one of these things we're working on. I'll leave it at that.
I wanted to ask you, that's not a trophy behind you, that little
that's Groot.
Table?
I think that's Groot. Groot from Guardians.
Oh, that's Groot.
Groot, it was a toy years ago I bought from my son, and at night he thought it would wake up and kill him like Chucky.
I mean, it is terrifying. It looks like the Wicker Man or something.
So he put it up here, and now it's been there for a few years, just sitting there. But
excellent.
I like, it's Baby Groot. I love Baby Groot.
Awesome. Well, it's been quite a treat picking your brain a little bit here. And we are now you're a marketing genius, because now I'm dying to know what is coming up.
You'll see it. You won't be able to miss it. How about that?
And how many Porsches do you plan on buying with the proceeds of your coloring book?
So many. What kind of Porsche can you buy with $200? Would be my question to you.
Well, here's a quick
Matchbox.
What's a good starter car? You know, like what was your first kind of car that you bought as like, this isn't a car that I need to haul groceries. Like, I just want this.
We call those the taproot, the first car that you bought that kind of kicked off the really the enthusiasm. Well, here, let me throw this answer back to you, which is an answer to a different question, but kind of what you're asking, which is, you know, if you can't, you know, like I couldn't when I first moved out here, if you can't afford a Porsche, what else do you look at right now? And I always recommend Volkswagens. Like, these vintage Volkswagens are still cheap. They're German. They're air cooled. They've got a manual gearbox. They're the same kind of tin can as a Porsche 356. You can hot rod the engine a little bit and get it going faster for not a lot of money. And you can get a lot of the vintage experience in there. And I have a couple myself, and I like these cars. They're fun and they're beautiful inside. And I think they're more valuable than people think they are. I think the market is low for them right now.
I'm a big fan of those Sciroccos. Those are pretty sweet.
I'm saying, yeah, they're cool, but I'm saying go way back.
Are you saying way back?
Yeah, 60s and 70s Volkswagen right now. Absolutely. All right. I mean, I'm getting a new one, I think, in a couple of weeks, and I'm so excited about it. It costs like nothing, but it delivers that vintage experience, at least design-wise, all over the place. So now all I have to do is really, you know, get that engine going, and I've got a nice little Malibu cruiser, right? Throw a rack on top, put a surfboard on it. I'm having fun.
Do you use the surfboard or it's just...
Nope, it's all show.
Yeah.
Just so I can fly off and kill someone behind me. That's all.
Get some bungee cords. Awesome talking to you. As we said at the top, we're both very big fans of yours. So really a treat to talk, man.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review, give us a share. Don't make me beg people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.